Let's just not start off in a negative mood, I tell you.
I know this guy from somewhere.
Hi, this is Jay Marvin.
Morning, Jay. How are you doing?
Good morning, Jay.
Love your show, Jay.
It's really great to listen to you.
And I appreciate what you do on the radio.
Jay Marvin. This is the Jay Marvin Show.
The Jay Marvin Show.
Hey, Jay.
Jay Marvin.
This is the Jay Marvin Show on AM 760 Progressive Talk.
Good morning, 9:05, 5 minutes after 9. Jay Marvin here, AM 760 Progressive Talk. Partly sunny. High today is going to be 56. And we're joined by the founder and president of the American Small Business League, Lloyd Chapman. And he also blogs on HuffingtonPost.com. And you can also go to ASBL.com. And we're going to talk to him about small business, the economy, and also what's likely to or not happen under the Obama administration. And Lloyd, good morning, and welcome to the show.
Jay, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay.
For people who own small businesses here in Denver, the economy is rather rough right now. As a matter of fact, it's more than rather rough. It is rough. And what are you hearing from your members about this?
Oh, people are devastated. You know, most Americans work for small businesses, and they're the job creators. And when the economy gets this bad, it definitely affects small businesses. So, you know, it's horrible.
Now, I've asked you to comment on this before, but I want to do it again. Let's get a definition. A definition of a small business is how many employees?
Well, the U.S. Census Bureau says 98% of all U.S. companies have less than 100 employees. And that's my favorite definition. I think that's the most realistic and representative of America. The federal government, although, as we've discussed many times, allows Fortune 500 corporations to be considered small businesses. But I think 100 employees is actually what it should be.
Okay. And how about earnings? What is do you know what the average small business makes?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's around...
Because I've heard it's about $100,000.
Yeah, that's probably about right. That's probably about right, but I have to say I haven't looked at that lately. I know the average, you know, person makes somewhere in the high 40s, but I think I've seen statistics on what the average small business generates.
All right. So if you make probably $100,000 or less, then you basically are not going to be affected by the economic policies or the proposed economic policies of Barack Obama, true?
Yeah, it's not gonna have much of an impact. In fact, I'm kind of disappointed, at the things he's proposed so far. I was really hoping something much more dramatic than that.
All right. What parts are you disappointed about?
Well, you know, I came out during the primary and endorsed him. And in February, he agreed to help us with our number one issue, which, as you know, Jay, and have helped me talk about many times, the diversion of small business contracts to Fortune 500 corporations. So in February, he came out and said it's time to end the diversion of federal small business contracts to corporate giants. Try to find that on his website. It's in there, but it took me 4 hours to find it. And if you look on his website right now, small businesses aren't even one of the major issues. So he considers a major issue heading is called rural. Another one's called service. But small businesses are buried back in with a heading called people between seniors and sportsmen. I just don't think that's appropriate. We're looking at the biggest economic downturn since the Great Depression. Small businesses are the job creators here in America. They're the companies, as we discussed, where most Americans work. And for him to put small business issues between seniors and sportsmen, to me, is just unbelievable.
But you know, at some point when we're talking about the economy, he's going to have to start talking about small business and what he's going to do with small businesses.
Well, you know, I hope so. Like I said, I was actually up last night writing a press release about how unhappy I am with the fact that, you know, if you go to his website, he has specific detailed plans on dozens and dozens of issues, very specific detailed plans. But you will not find anything on his website to address issues specifically for small businesses other than he's got two that he likes. One is, no capital gains for startups.
Right.
And he's going to have small business incubators. Well, that's great. What about the 27 million small businesses that are struggling right now? There's absolutely nothing on there for those companies.
What is would his plan, though, about small business, would that fall under taxes?
No. Again, I think the appropriate place, if you were to go to his website, the appropriate place to find small business issues would be under issues under small business. But
because the reason I ask that is because one thing I do know for sure, that they are, the transition team right now is looking at all these government agencies, and you know one of the government agencies they're going to look at is the Small Business Administration.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. One thing that I was happy to see, in fact, I'll tell you something interesting. I'm kind of confused. A few days ago, he had a website called change.gov. And when I looked at it a couple of days ago, it had his agenda and all his proposals. I looked at it this morning, and it looks like a lot of those are not on there anymore. But they're back on the what I would call the campaign website. So I'm actually just trying to figure that out today. But during the campaign, he made a number of promises. He said he was going to restore the SBA, the Small Business Administration budget and staffing, and repair the damage that George Bush did, and address this diversion of small business contracts to, you know, large companies. But when I looked at the change.gov website the other day, although there were dozens and dozens of specific proposals, there was nothing on there about that. So I'm just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to bring up. Don't you think we owe it to him to wait to see till he gets into office to see what he's going to do? Because, boy, can you – I mean, I don't think – no, I don't want to say that. I don't want to say I don't think, but – sometimes I believe that most people do not realize how big of a mess that the present administration has left us in and how long it's going to take to go through and undo all this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. It's like I said, I'm being patient, but I just, you know, here's my opinion. If he can address issues titled rural and service, I'm just puzzled why there's not an issue that says small business. That's my only question. And again, we're looking at a huge economic downturn. Small businesses are devastated. You know, I saw a statistic a few months ago that said large businesses haven't created one new job in America since 1977. And I've seen statistics ranging from 75% to 95% as to the percentage of new jobs created by small businesses. So if you're trying to stimulate the economy, you'd have to focus it all on small businesses because large businesses don't create new jobs in this country. But I'm just, like I said, I'm being impatient, Jay, but you know, I see them addressing a lot of issues that in my mind aren't as important as these, and I don't see any plans to address them. So I'm just getting nervous.
Well, you know what? I don't think you're alone in being nervous and feeling anxious. I mean, we've got to wait until January the 20th. And it doesn't seem that the current administration is interested in doing much of anything except trying to block any efforts that the Congress may come up with to, for instance, help the auto industry. But, you know, we have to wait till January the 20th. Meanwhile, you've got small businesses out there. You've got individuals out there who are scared to death, who are nervous, and who are struggling to keep their heads above water. And I almost thought to myself this morning that, and I don't think this has ever happened in the history of America, but I almost think that would be a good idea for George W. Bush to relinquish his presidency earlier than January the 20th. Like, in other words, get out now.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, we would like him to get out now, you know, like 5 years ago.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I mean, having to wait till January the 20th is like, and I'm not saying that he would have to immediately move out of the White House and the Obama family would immediately move in. But at least, you know, the Obama family could, you know, Barack Obama could conduct business from Chicago or wherever it is until January the 20th. But let him have control. And let's get going here, because I think everybody's anxious to move, but the problem is that we have to wait till the 20th. Now, the upside of this is that it gives him time to think things through and to come up with concrete plans, but the downside of it is it doesn't make any of us feel any better.
Yeah, I'll tell you something, Jay. I'm privy to some information that most people don't know about. You know, I'm suing the Bush administration in federal court right now.
Oh, that's still going on.
Oh yeah. In fact, I'm suing the Bush administration and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to simply try to get the names of firms that got small business contracts. Another suit I'm preparing to file against the SBA is for libel and slander. So I found out that one reason Bush doesn't want to relinquish control is that they are shredding documents like crazy in Washington. Every agency is going through their records and destroying a lot of information that they don't want the next administration to see. When I did a Freedom of Information request to the SBA for some emails from their communications director, Mike Stamler, that I thought were damaging, they came back and said those have all been deleted.
But the trouble of that is you can't delete email.
Well, they're saying that this information is not available because it's all been deleted. In fact, they said everything prior to a certain date has been deleted. I also went to another event for a politician here in California, and it was discussed that the Obama team has had an army of lawyers drafting legislation for months. So, you know, it's not like he's got to decide in the next 60 days what he's going to do. He's known for a year, and the legislation has already been written. And from what I am told by my friends in Washington, on his first day in office, he's going to deliver, you know, dozens and dozens of bills to Congress and that his staff has written. So he's not going to wait for Congress to write legislation. He has written dozens and maybe hundreds of pieces of legislation they're going to walk in the door with. So I don't think that it's a matter of him not knowing what he's going to do, quite frankly. I think that they've known for months.
Yeah, they're just not in the position right now to tell us what they're going to do.
Well, you know, they can't tell us everything. But again, if you look at the website, there's a lot of information about, you know, what they're saying that they're going to do. But my concern is for America's 27 million small businesses, there's nothing there for them. I mean, there's you know, things for seniors and sportsmen and you know. But I don't see anything for small businesses, so I hope you can't blame me for being kind of concerned about that.
No, I don't blame you, but I think the thing we got to do is I think we got to wait. We got to wait till he gets in and see what starts to happen, and we have to keep the enormity of the problem in mind. Have you talked to anybody with the Obama folks?
Well, I talked to President-elect Obama back about 3 months ago when he was here in California about it, and I was working with a team of his people for several months on their small business plan, but I haven't talked to anybody lately. It's been, you can imagine trying to get through to people that you could talk to in the campaign. It's just, you know, it's impossible now.
So you've tried and just couldn't get through?
Yeah. In fact, I made a couple of calls a few weeks ago, and they were returned, so I quit, you know, calling. They might be a little mad at me. You know, I was upset that he had tried to distance himself from that pledge he made to end the diversion of federal small business contracts to corporate giants. He never mentioned it again publicly. They tried to bury it in the website, and I was not happy about that. I wrote a press release about that. Probably made him mad. But, you know, we endorsed him because of his pledge to address that issue. And, you know, that's my number one, you know, issue and something I work on every day. So I was just really expecting him to be more vocal about it. And in fact, I'll tell you something interesting, Jay. And again, you know, I'm an Obama supporter, right? I endorsed him during the primaries, and that was a pretty bold move of my part. And I did hundreds of radio shows, my staff, you know, sort of campaigning for him. But I'm just concerned, you know, that now he's been elected, that those issues might, you know, fall through the cracks.
I don't know how they, you know what, if you're going to deal with the economy realistically, I don't know how they could.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. And I have some predictions. I'm not sure if I want to tell you, you know, on the air, but I think I know what's going to happen.
Well, why don't you say what they are?
Well, okay. in America, Congress is run, are influenced very heavily by industries and companies that have a lot of money. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, absolutely.
And small businesses don't contribute a lot of money to presidential campaigns. And I predict that you're not going to see Obama do anything significant to address the, for example, the diversion of, you know, small business contracts to Fortune 500 corporations. I do not think you'll see them do anything dramatic to address that. And I think they're going to allow that to continue. And I think you're not going to see him doing much for small business programs for women and minorities and veterans. And I think you'll see him do a whole lot to help venture capitalists. I was up this morning looking at his website, and the only two issues that were under small business on his website were, what was it called? We just talked about it. It was, no capital gains on startups and these incubators. And if you look through his website, you keep seeing this recurring theme of increasing access to venture capital. So as I looked through his website this morning early, kept seeing that venture capital, venture capital, venture capital. Well, venture capitalists gave Obama $800,000. I got that off of, I think, Open Secret. So I know that the venture capitalists have given the Democratic leadership millions and millions of dollars. So I predict right now in your show that the Obama administration will not do anything to address the diversion of federal small business contracts to Fortune 500 corporations, but you will see them adopt policies that will be very beneficial to the National Venture Capital Association. And I think we talked about this one time, but Congress already passed a piece of legislation about 3 months ago, in the House rather, that would allow companies that are owned 49% by the nation's wealthiest venture capitalists to be considered small businesses. So think about that. Think about your average Colorado small business with, you know, 10 or 15 employees now having to compete with a company that's owned by maybe a $10 billion California venture capital organization. Now, that's already passed the House, and I say Obama will sign it.
Well, here's my prediction. My prediction is that he will take care of small business. My prediction is that he will stop that diversion of funds. But my prediction is that he will handle question number A first before he handles anything else. And that's the shape of the economy. And also, I think it's going to take a while for them to go through all of these government agencies and try to fix what has gone on in the last 8 years. Now, I could be wrong, but that's my feeling. So we'll have to see what happens. Lloyd, thank you, man. Thank you, as always, for your time. And you know the door is always open to you.
Jay, thank you so much. You're my favorite man.
You know what? You're the best. Thanks,
all
Lloyd.
Right. Bye-bye.
All right, there's Lloyd Chapman from the Small Business League. All right, we'll open the phones now. 303-713-7600. Anything you want to talk about is fine. Here's Todd Parker with traffic. Twenty-six minutes after the hour here, AM 760, Progressive Talk, partly sunny. Hi today, 56, Jay Marvin with you. And the Salvation Army is Giving Tree is presented by AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Talk. And this holiday season, AM 760 and the Salvation Army are asking you to make a change in the life of a child. And isn't that what it's all about these days, change? Go to am760.net now, and you'll find the personal wish list of children from low-income Denver families. And you can purchase the gifts right from the website and send them directly to the Salvation Army. 4,500 children depend on the Salvation Army for gifts this holiday season. And you go look at the wish list on am760.net, and it'll break your heart. And there's a lot of stuff there for like under $40. So take time out to help a kid at Christmas, because you remember what that's like. Maybe you don't, but you might remember that, you know, when your parents fell on hard times, Christmas wasn't everything that it should be. And, you know, you got one kid in here. Tyler, age 12, is hoping for a Broncos T-shirt this holiday season. I mean, come on. Somebody can't take care of that. Lawrence, age 11, hopes for a radio-controlled plane, which is not that much money. So, really, help us out here. Go to am760.net, please. Get involved. Mary and I have, and you should too. Okay, let's go to the phones, and we'll go to Sylvia in Aurora. Sylvia, you're on AM760. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. The guy that was talking about the Japanese... about the Japanese cars and not liking ours.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably forgot that the Japanese were benefited after the war by us helping them start their business. So I don't think he's got a clear understanding of, he's thinking that they did it all themselves, and they didn't. We helped them develop that industry.
No, you're right about that. But I think what he's doing is he's operating on old information, which is the old information is that Detroit makes lousy cars, when in reality, yeah, at one point they did with planned obsolescence and all of those things. But now they've totally and completely gotten out of that, and they make some of the best cars in the world. And these cars get, you know, great reviews in magazines, and people really like them, but they still have that image hanging over them. But the bigger problem is that the economy is the way it is, and nobody's, you know, nobody wants to buy anything. And if anything, you know, used cars is where people's heads are at these days. And, you know, the whole basis of starting that conversation in the 7 o'clock hour is that you just can't let that many people in this country be out of work. I mean, it would just be insanity.
Absolutely. But at the same point, I just, you know, I think he forgets that it wasn't that easy for them. And we were the ones that helped them.
No, same thing with the Germans, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Sylvia.
Bye.
All right. Let's go to Doug on a cell phone. Doug, you're on AM 760. Go ahead.
Yeah. I felt like your previous guest was trashing Obama a little bit too much. I'm a small business owner, and one of my biggest issues is health insurance. And my health insurance on my employees just went.
Oh, what a bummer that is. All right, a couple of lines open at 303-713-7600. And let's go to Don in Littleton. Don, you're on AM 760. Go ahead.
Hey, Jim, I'm just wondering if you happened to read that editorial today in the Denver Post about the auto bailout.
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, talk about insulting to labor. I mean, these people work. I'm a retiree from AT&T, and God, I don't know what would happen if all of a sudden they threw away my pension and my medical benefits. But that's basically what the Denver Post editorial is saying, that before we give the auto industry any type of taxpayers' money, that we ought to just take the retirees and throw them out in the street, say, hey, you no longer have a pension fund, you no longer have any medical, too bad, you know. The CEOs and all of that still have their golden parachutes and everything, but the guy that worked the line for 40 years, he's basically out of luck. You know?
Well, the Denver Post editorial is nonsensical. It's nonsensical in the fact that if you take people who have pensions and have benefits and health care, and you just cut them out and say, okay, we can't make our commitments. Number one, they've made their commitment to the company. They've worked all these years. Number two, okay, then who does the Denver Post or anybody else think is going to pick up the slack? It's going to be the American taxpayer.
Correct.
So, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I read that and just couldn't quite get where they were coming from. I mean, other than the fact that, yeah, it's insulting to labor. And it just goes to show you that the standards in this country have changed, and no wonder people are cynical. They're cynical because you work all of your life for a company, you're supposed to have pensions and benefits, and then all of a sudden those pension and benefits are gone, and people say, yeah, well, that stuff's never going to be there for me, and it violates trust between the employee and the.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I'm from back in Chicago. And I got a brother-in-law back there that worked for one of the steel mills, Reynolds, I'm sorry, not steel mills, Reynolds Aluminum. The company went out. He bailed out. It was enough to get a retirement out of him. I don't know, 6, 8, 9 months later, he got a call back. They were going to reopen it under another name, and the company wanted to know if he wanted to come back. The salary was, you know, less than half of what he would have been making, so he said no. And later on, about 6 months later, he ran into somebody that got hired there. And this guy was really happy on all the money he was making. And my brother-in-law talked to him, and come to find out that this guy is working 60 hours a week, making less than my brother-in-law had been working a 40-hour week.
Yeah.
It's a non-union shop. You know, and the guy thought, hey, I'm really making a good buck here, you know, working, you know. But it's just unbelievable what business can do to you, you know.
Yeah, it is. It is unbelievable. And we've got to hold them to a higher standard. Hey, man, thanks. I appreciate the call.
Okay, Jay, take it easy.
All right. Here's some breaking news. Paulson, Treasury Secretary Paulson, shifts bailout focus to borrowers and non-banks. Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson said that the $700 billion financial bailout program would not be used to buy troubled mortgage-backed assets as originally intended. Instead, capital would be provided directly to non-bank companies as well as banks and financial institutions, and that more would be done to prevent home foreclosures. So we'll have to see how that works out, and we'll have to see what happens with that. 9:33, 33 minutes after the hour here at AM 760, Progressive Talk, and let's get traffic now. Lawyers, guns, and money. 9:38, 38 minutes after the hour here, AM 760, Progressive Talk. Partly sunny. Hi today, 56, Jay Marvin with you. It's open phones, 303-713-7600. Let's go to Steve in Denver. Steve, you're on AM 760. Good morning.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, man.
I haven't talked to you since we got our man in office.
There you go.
Hey, do you think Bush and Cheney were a little surprised by the Obama wave of him coming into power and just how much momentum he had, that he brought with him? Do you think they're worried about that?
No, I don't think they were surprised. I think they knew it was coming. But when you get into the last weeks of the election like that, what are you going to do? You're just going to throw in the towel? No. But you notice how Bush stayed pretty much absent during the whole election campaign, and now he's just been kind of rendered irrelevant. They knew what was going to happen. They knew. And they're prepared for it, too.
Well, the thing is, after Bush gets out of office, I hope that, somewhere we can still keep a focus on him and go through everything they did during their administration. I'd like, that would make me feel better.
Well, I think a lot of stuff's going to come out. I think there's no way they can hide a lot of that. There's going to be a lot of people, too, who are going to feel free to come forward and talk about what went on. So I think you are going to see a lot of stuff going on. But I know that there's people out there who think, well, now once Obama gets into office now, he should take the DOJ and go after Bush and all of that. I maintain that that's all fine down the road. But right now, what we need is after January the 20th is we need somebody with a steady hand and the intelligence factor to be able to grab the helm of the ship of state and steer us out of the economic situation that we're in.
And then the last thing I'd like to say is this Rush Limbaugh character, boy, that dude is getting out of hand. And, when he got into his legal troubles, it seems like we kind of dealt him a light hand as far as dealing with him. And I feel like somebody needs to crack down on that guy. The venom that he's been spitting out there about Obama.
Well, that's a real tricky question. I mean, it's sad, but it's true, man. There's very few standards in broadcasting in America today, and any nut job with a microphone basically can get on and make all kinds of irrational and over-the-top statements. And I think if you listen to AM Talk Radio, I think that you find that that's true. And I think that AM Talk Radio risks inefficient, inefficient, no, well, irrelevant. I think it risks leaving itself irrelevant because a lot of these comments that are made by a lot of these hosts, they just don't have any facts to back them up. Now, look, it's one thing if you say, hey, here's the way I feel. I'm not exactly sure I'm right, but this is the feeling I get. There's nothing wrong with operating on emotion as well as facts. But when you operate totally on emotion and no facts, and you operate on emotion to the point where you're not in reality, then it robs your credibility. I mean, people listen to that and go, oh, come on. There's right. No way. And that's what I think talk radio risks doing. I think it risks making itself irrelevant as time goes on with this kind of behavior. I mean, there's nobody out there who has any degree of sanity who believes that Barack Obama should be compared to Hitler or be compared to Fidel Castro or, right. compare. And these folks do it. I mean, there's a talk show host here locally who made a comment that Barack Obama wearing those, native native Kenyan garb is equivalent to JFK putting on, a set of Cuban fatigues in the 60s. And, you know, that's just not historic. I mean, that's not even in the playing field of reality.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's not.
I just wanted to tell you also, and this will be the last thing I'll say, is that, you know, when you were talking about the Small Business Administration, I'm with you. I think, you know, that I believe in this Obama totally, and I think that he's going to address all those issues as he goes through his presidency.
Yeah, it's just going to take him a while to get down to all that stuff.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole thing.
Appreciate it, Jay.
All right, thanks, Steve. Yeah, you ever go to Media Matters for America or ColoradoMediaMatters.org and look at some of that stuff that's been said by some of these people? I mean, some of it is just absolutely incredibly insane and stupid. And it's like, okay, so how does any rational thinking adult listen to this stuff and buy it? I have no clue. And I think the biggest example of this was during the campaign when people would repeat these talking points to you, but they would never have anything to back those talking points up with. And it's like, you know, after a while, you just say to yourself, well, I can't get anywhere. There's nothing more I can say. There's nothing more I can do. And if you want to believe that and live in a fairy tale, that's fine. But I think the election proved that the majority of Americans don't want to live in a fairy tale, and the majority of Americans can tell what the truth and what the truth isn't. Let's go to Marge in Wheat Ridge. Marge, you're on AM 760. Good morning.
Hi, Jay. This is Marge. How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How you feeling?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm hanging in.
I'll bring you some soup.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll feel better tomorrow.
Well, anyway, I'm calling to tell you how I think the Obama thing has affected me with my business. And, I'm a small business, and I'm just going on sheer hope right now, just sheer hope and hanging in there. Because if McCain got in, I was going to close up shop and sell it. And, you know, I don't know where I would get a job. There's no jobs, but, you know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, how's your business doing?
It's last week after the election it picked up, and then this week it slowed back down again. And I heard from a friend of mine, two more businesses around us have just closed up. They just closed down.
Well, give your business a plug.
Well, I'm Large Marge's.
Yeah, Philly cheesesteaks, right?
Yeah, I didn't want to go out there. By the way, from the last time I talked to you on the radio, people come in and they say hi, and they all want to call in, but they're afraid to call in and talk to you. So,
well, they shouldn't be afraid to call in and talk to me. And give the address of your business.
39th and Kipling, across from the Wheat Ridge Rec Center. It's Large Marge's Philly Cheesesteaks.
All right. So now everybody who's listening that's in the Wheat Ridge area today, go buy Large Marge's and scarf one of those delicious Philly cheesesteaks. And you'll not only do something for small business, but you'll also do something for yourself, which is make your stomach feel good.
Thanks, Jay. Hey, can I tell you about my poll watching experience?
Sure.
I was chosen to be a poll watcher. And, I have law school. I went to law school. I didn't finish. But they give us the state law to go by when we're poll watching. And the state law requires that, you know, when you show your ID, it's only for identity only, not to compare addresses if you're in the poll book.
Right.
So if they're a registered voter in the poll book, it doesn't matter if your address matches or not. Well, what was happening is the poll judges were sending people over to provisional ballots if their addresses didn't match. And so I got into a little heated discussion with one of the poll judges about it. I called the lawyers up that sent us out to be poll watchers, told them what was going on. Unfortunately, you know, I had no authority to do anything about it. So when I came back in and me and the poll judge talked again, he showed me his book. And his book was written to where if the addresses did not match, it was very specific to send them to provisional ballots. So their training manual's written that way.
Hmm.
So my question is, so who do we go to make sure that's all corrected for the next election?
Well, technically he would be right. I mean, technically they would be right. I mean, when you move, you're supposed to re-register, and you're supposed to let the registrar's office know, where you moved to and what your address is, because 9 times out of 10, unless you move like across the street or someplace within your current congressional district, you can move out of your congressional district. And then if you move out of your congressional district, then you got to re-register.
They're still in their district. They're still registered in their precinct.
Well, you know? Yeah, but you still have to, if you make any address change at all, you still have to report that.
Right. I understand that. But if they're still living in their same precinct,
doesn't make any difference. Anytime you move, you got to report it.
Right, but from what I understand, though, I understand you got to report it. From what these people were telling me, a lot of people were telling me, is that if they're still in the same precinct and in the poll book, they should be able to vote a regular ballot, not a provisional.
No, not if their address has changed.
Huh.
Now, I could be wrong about that, but that's what I've always understood. And I've always made sure that I don't get caught in that situation, that even if I moved down the block, I would tell them that my address has changed.
Well, yeah, and the other thing was a lot of mail-in ballot people didn't get their mail-ins, and of course they were all sent over to provisional.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Why, you know, I wonder how many people did not get their mail-in ballots. That seems to me to be kind of like, well, did you request it early enough, or what was the story there?
Well, I know I requested mine pretty late. I was on the edge of not getting mine, but I did get it and did the mail-in thing. But, you know, I don't know. I guess you just get wrapped up in stuff, and you finally like, okay, I'll apply for a mail-in ballot.
Yeah, you know what you do? This year, because it was so important, Mary and I not only applied early for ours, but also we never mailed ours in. We hand-carried it.
Yeah, I did too. I took it down to the DMV.
Yeah, to make sure that we were, you know, going to get counted. So we didn't take any chances. But I may not be right about that changing address business, but I've always, just to cover myself, I've always just given a change of address, no matter where I move, so that I'm sure to stay on the rolls and be able to vote.
Well, the thing is you know, the rolls are kind of funny. It says if you move, you're to be sent back to the precinct where you live for the poll books you're registered in to go vote. You know, it's just I don't know. I think somebody who's a campaign lawyer should really look into it and look at the training books, you know, and see if they're written right. Because the people who are doing the poll judging go by the book, which is a good thing, you know. So if the book isn't written correctly, then, you know, they're going to go by what's in the book. And if it's not correct, well, then it will be litigated in court later, which would just hold up the process.
Well, I think you got a great point. I mean, I think somebody should look into that and get it cleared up.
Yeah.
But we've got 2 years to do that, because that's the next election cycle. All right, Marge, give your address again.
39th and Kipling, close from the Wheat Ridge Rec Center.
All right, it's Large Marge Philly Cheese Steaks. Get over there today, eat one, make a small business happen, Marge's small business, and then also on top of that, do something good for your taste buds. Right?
All right, thanks, Jay. Love you, man.
I love you too, Marge. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Oh, and by the way, Marge has got a Facebook page. Fans of Marge's, Large Marge's Cheese Steak, Philly Cheese Steaks, she's got a Facebook page. We've also got a Facebook page for this show called Turn Left with Jay Marvin, and you can join that. And then John Turk has a Facebook page, and I've got a Facebook page, so you're more than welcome to get in on that. And then I've got a blog at jmarvinblog.com, and then I want to urge you to go to am760.net, because the Salvation Army's Giving Tree is presented by AM760, Colorado's Progressive Talk. This holiday season, AM760 and the Salvation Army are asking you to make a change in the life of a child, and isn't change what it's all about these days? Go to am760.net. right now, and you'll find the personal wish list of children from low-income Denver families. And you can purchase the gifts right from the website and send them directly to the Salvation Army. 4,500 children depend on the Salvation Army gifts this holiday season. And you go look at the wish list, I mean, it'll just tear your heart out. And it's not that expensive. So, really, I'm just asking, I'm appealing to your better nature. Go to am760.net. Help us out. Help us make this thing a success. And you don't have to spend a lot of money to do it, but it's a way of getting together with the Salvation Army, which provides low-income Denver children with hot meals, tutoring programs, and after-school programs, all free of charge. So, look, they're doing a lot out there, and you know what? They need your help. And we wish you would take some time to get involved in this. AM760.net. Go over there and look for the Giving Tree. And look, Mary and I already did ours, and you can do yours too. It's 9:52, 52 minutes after the hour. Let's take a look at traffic.